Okay, well, brace yourselves. You know what I'm going to say. So I've got your Bible handy. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's easy because it's right at the chapter break, and it is chapter 18. And, of course, this is a very famous portion. We're going to see a whole lot of key things take place. But anyway, chapter 18, verse 1 begins this way. Ve-yitro. Actually, it's ve-yishma. And heard, Yitro. So there's the unique word, Yitro. That's the name of the parsha, of course. Or Jethro in some English versions. I like Yitro better because it does sound too much like the Beverly Hillbillies. At least we know where his name came from. In any case, Yitro, the priest of Midian, Moshe's father-in-law, heard of all that Elohim had done for Moshe and his people and for Israel, and how Yahuwah had brought Israel out of Mitzrayim or Egypt. And it says, and Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moshe's wife, that would be his daughter, after he had shalached her, had sent her away. Now, we're never told why. The most logical explanation is that he thought maybe he might not be coming back. Maybe he didn't have quite enough faith that everything was going to work out. It's hard to say, but whatever the reason, it sounded like he figured she'd be better off being somewhere else while all this drama was going on. And now Moshe's father-in-law is bringing her back. And he also brought her two sons, of whom the name was one was Gershom, for he said, and Ger, of course, is the word we know to mean a stranger. So, Gershom, I have been a stranger in a strange land, or a sojourner. The name of the other one was Eliezer, for the Elohim of my father was my help, and he delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. So, Eliezer. Eli, of course, is El, and my help. So Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moshe in the wilderness, Bamidbar, where he was encamped at the mount of Elohim, Har Elohim. And he said to Moshe, I, your father Yitro, am coming unto you with your wife and your two sons along with her. So Moshe went out to meet his father-in-law, and he bowed down and he kissed him. They asked each other, how y'all are doing? How's your welfare? They came into the tent. And then Moshe told his father-in-law all that Yahuwah had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for the sake of Israel, all the travail that had come upon him along the way, and how Yahuwah had delivered him. And Yitro, it says, rejoiced. He was excited for all the goodness which Yahuwah had done to Israel, in that he had delivered them out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Yitro said, blessed be Yahuwah, who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now, this is interesting. Remember, we would generally think, because he was a priest of Midian, that Yitro was a pagan. And it sounds like there's going to be a major change here. He has heard and understand that there is a much better God. This is the key, the next verse. Now I know, he says, that Yahuwah is greater than all the gods. Yea. Now, this was interesting, too. Notice the plural here. Of course, Elohim is plural, but he actually says, yea, for that they dealt proudly against them. And it says, Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law. Notice how many times it says that here. He took a burnt offering, and he made sacrifices for Elohim, and Aaron came, all the elders of Israel, to eat bread with Moshe's father-in-law before Moshe. Now, you notice what it doesn't say that Moses is here. Is he or is he not? Well, the assumption I always made was that he must have been. But in context, it looks like there could be an issue. It's not quite as specific as we might like to be able to say for sure. But it says it came to pass in the morning, in the morrow, Moshe sat to judge the people. They stood around about Moshe from morning until evening. So is that what he was doing before too? Did he miss the feast for this reason? Again, we're not told precisely, but one thing is clear. Yitro sees it, and it's lo tov. He's going to talk to Moshe about it. So, and when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he says, what is this thing you're doing to the people? Why are you sitting yourself all alone, all the people standing around you from morning until evening? Moshe said to his father-in-law, oh, well, it's because the people come to me. They need to inquire of Elohim. So when they have a matter, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor. I make them known the statutes of Elohim and his Torot, his instruction. So Moshe's father-in-law said unto him, this thing you're doing, this is lo tov, not good. So, and notice though, this is one of the things I've always thought was most important. He tells him it's not good. No doubt about it. It's not good. He's going to fix it. But he offers constructive criticism. He does not simply say, lo tov, without telling him that there's something better you can do. And not only does he give him a better example, but he also says, check it out, and you ask and see if you don't get this word. So, you'll surely wear yourself down, both you and this people that's with you, because this is just plain too heavy of a thing for you to bear. You can't possibly do it all by yourself. So, hearken now, he says, unto my voice. I will give you counsel, and Elohim be with you. You be for the people before Elohim, and you bring the causes unto Elohim. Now, here's what he suggests. And you shall teach them the statutes and the laws. So the ha-hukim, and that would be the statutes, and the torot. And you'll show them the way where they must walk and the work that they need to do. Moreover, you shall provide of all the people able men. And this is what I think is an interesting and wonderful summary. He says, men who fear Elohim, listen to the category of requirements here, and think how much better it would be if we had men like this in our government. Men who fear Elohim, well, right there, it gets about 99% of the so-called representatives out of the way. Men of truth, oop, that takes out most of the rest of them, or maybe it's a lot of the same. Hating unjust gain. I'm not sure that doesn't take out every single one of them. Hating unjust gain, and put such men over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. Now let them judge the people all the time, all seasons, and it'll be that every great matter they can still bring to you. But every small matter they judge among themselves, so they shall make it easier for you and bear the burden with you. If you do this thing, and Elohim commands you, so notice, he says, don't just believe me, check it out. Then you'll be able to endure, and all this people shall be able to go to their place in peace. So what? Moshe hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law, and he did all that he had said. Moses chose able men out of Israel, and he made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard cases they still brought to Moshe, but every small matter they could judge for themselves. And Moshe let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way unto his own land. Now, there's an interesting turn of phrase here, because essentially, it's when he says he went his way, let his father-in-law depart, he went his way into his own land, almost like at this point, his father-in-law is a man with a mission. Right? The next chapter says, in the third month after the B'nai Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, same day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. So they came B'midbar, into the wilderness of Sinai. Now, I want you to notice something. This is one of those things that I have highlighted in the margins of my own Bible here that I've always thought was kind of fascinating, and it is notable in the Midrash. These people, plural, all the way through this, it's two verses, but it's one sentence, basically. It's always they. So listen up. They came into the wilderness of Sinai. Then they were departed from Rephidim, and when they had come into the wilderness of Sinai, they encamped B'midbar in the wilderness, and there Israel, whoops, encamped before the mountain. So it's they up until they get to the wilderness of Sinai, and now it is Israel, Ichad, a unity. The singular is used. So Moshe went up unto Elohim. Yahuwah called to him out of the mountain. He said, this is what you shall say to the house of Yaakov and tell the B'nai Israel. So here's another one of those very interesting places where we see Yaakov's been renamed. He's now Israel, but Scripture not only continues to use both his names, sometimes uses them both in the very same verse, like here. So, you shall say this to the house of Yaakov. So, there's the 12 tribes. I tend to think that's, again, the physical understanding. You speak this to the house and tell the children of Israel. This is something that's going to resonate. In other words, you're telling the children of Israel, and they need to hearken. You've seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings, brought you unto myself. Now, therefore, is the key Hebrew word, if you will hearken unto my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be mine, mine own treasure, from among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, and a holy, a set-apart Kadosh nation. These are the words which Moshe, shall speak unto the children of Israel. So Moses came, he called for the elders of all the people, and he set them before them all these words which Yahuwah had commanded him. Now, this next verse is key. It is certainly one of the foremost understandings in the Torah. All the people, kol ha'am, all the people answered together. We get this understanding. This is all of them. This is everyone. They're together even. And, of course, that was emphasized because they're echad. Israel has encamped before the mountain. And they said, all that Yahuwah has spoken, we will do. There it is. All that he has spoken, we will do. So Moshe reported these words of the people unto Yahuwah. And Yahuwah said to Moshe, look, I'm coming unto you in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you, and they also may believe you forever. Leolam. And Moshe told the words of the people unto Yahuwah. And Yahuwah said to Moshe, go to the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow. Let them wash their garments and be ready against the third day, because the third day is when Yahuwah will come down to the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And you shall set bounds to the people round about and say, take heed to yourselves that you do not go up that mountain nor touch the border of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. So this is serious, no wonder. No hand shall touch him, but he will surely be stoned or shot through. Whether it's beast or man, it shall not live. When the ram's horn sounds long, they shall come up to the mountain. So Moshe went down from the mountain to the people, and he sanctified them, and they washed their garments. And he said to the folks, be ready against the third day. And I'm going to correct most English renderings here. And it says, do not come near a wife. The word is Isha, okay? Isha means wife or woman. In this case, it's very obvious it had better be wife. Came to pass them on the third day when it was, and it's an interesting thing. It's kind of like, this is a time to be separated for these 3 days because something's going to happen and you need to be in a very different state of being, I guess. So came to pass them on the third day when it was morning. There were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mountain and the voice of a horn exceedingly loud, and all the people in the camp trembled. So what we're getting ready to see here, of course, is not just the giving of the Ten Commandments. I am among those, and I think a lot of the Midrash kind of bears this out. They heard a lot of things. They even saw the thunderings, and that's key. We'll talk about that more in a second. But I kind of tend to think the way this is being described here, if they had the words and if the technology existed, we would have said they're getting a massive download. They're getting a lot of stuff, and it's going to be almost an overload in the way of a download. So Moshe brought forth the people out of the camp to meet Elohim. They stood at the nether part of the mount. Now it says Mount Sinai was altogether on smoke, because Yahuwah had descended upon it in fire. The smoke thereof ascended like the smoke of a furnace. The whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the voice of the horn waxed louder and louder, Moshe spoke, and Elohim answered him by a voice. And Yahuwah came down upon Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and Yahuwah called Moshe up to the top of the mountain, and Moshe went up. That word, Allah, he went up. And that's where the root word, by the way, Aliyah, comes from, too, if you remember that one, to go back to the land and go up. So Moshe then said unto Moshe, go down, charge the people, lest they break through unto Yahuwah to gaze, and many of them perish. Let the priests, too, that they come near Yahuwah, sanctify themselves, lest Yahuwah break forth upon them. And it's interesting, who are the priests that are being talked about here? Moshe has a brother. We know that eventually the Kohanim are going to consist of the brothers, of the sons of Aaron and his sons. But as of yet, they have not been identified. So it's kind of interesting. The general Midrash suggests that prior to this time, the firstborn had the responsibility of being the Kohen for the house. So that seems to be what it's referring to, because it can't be the ones that we're going to see in a few chapters. Moshe then said unto Yahuwah, the people can't come up to Mount Sinai because you didn't charge us saying set bounds, because you did. You told us set bounds around it and sanctify it. So he's reminding him, yep, they can't come all the way up. Yahuwah then said unto him, go get yourself down and you shall come up, you and Aaron with you, but do not let the priests and the people break through to come up unto Yahuwah, lest he break forth unto them. So Moshe went down to the people and he told them. And then we get the following. So this is one of the most famous chapters in the book. This is, of course, Exodus chapter 20. It's also known as the giving of the 10 Deborim, the 10 words, the 10 sayings, yeah, sometimes the 10 commandments. And then it says this, and Elohim spoke all of these words, ha Deborim, the words, and he said, and this first one is, of course, always interesting, and it is the first. Anoki Yahuwah Eloheka. I am Yahuwah Yirel. And notice, it's interesting. Normally, it's Ani, which is, according to most of the Hebrew scholars, it has the very same meaning in terms of, you know, part of speech and so forth. But it's interesting here that it's just slightly different. It's not just Ani, it's Anoki Yahuwah Yirel. Who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of that house of bondage, you shall have no other Elohim, other mighty ones, other anything before me. And you're not to make for yourself a graven image, nor any manner of likeness, not of anything that's in the heavens above, or that's in the earth beneath, or that's in the water under the earth. Don't bow down unto them, nor serve them, for Ani Yahuwah, I your El, am a jealous El, visiting the iniquity of the fathers onto the children, to the third and fourth generation of those that hate me, and, he says, showing mercy to the thousandth generation of them that, two things, love me, okay, and keep my commandments. And you notice in John 14, Yeshua says, if you love me, keep my commandments. I've always thought that's a fascinating restatement of something, and he makes it a conditional in an interesting way. If you love me, keep my commandments. In this case, it's just a requirement. But notice that it's those that are going to get the mercy for 1,000 generations. Then it says, Lo tisa, do not take the name of Yahuwah, your El, in vain. In other words, reduce it to nothingness. Nullify his name. I've said this before, and every time I go through this, I can't help but think it almost resonates a little bit more strongly. What has the King James and all the English versions done? They have taken his name, and they have reduced it not quite to nothingness, but they have taken the power out of what he said over and over and over again, Ani Yahuwah, and said it, I am the Lord. No, you're not. He said, I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and he also said, do not take the name of not the Lord, no, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh in vain. Don't reduce it to nothing, which is sure looks like what they've done. And by the way, you've heard this. I'm going to say it, folks. Brace yourselves. This does not mean don't say God damn it. That has nothing to do with his real name, and it has nothing to do with what this commandment is saying, to make it nothingness. Because Yahuwah, it says, will not hold him guiltless who takes his name and reduces it to falsehood, to vanity, to emptiness. Again, to nothingness. Something very serious here that we miss. And I think that's part of the reason why I emphasize that, you know, that word that you're not supposed to say, it's not in here. Not only that, what that really does is it reduces the commandment to something which is different as well and kind of reduces it to nothingness, because most people don't even know what his name is, sadly, because it's been reduced to nothing. They don't even know it. All right, from there, here's one that the whore church basically blows big time. It says, don't do it. They do it. How do you define what a Christian is? Well, they go to church on Sun God Day. Remember the Sabbath day, he says, to call it to mind, zakar, set it apart, make it kadosh. Keep it holy, the seventh day, his Sabbath. Ironically, No, it's one of several that has been basically reduced to nothingness, turned into vanity or falsehood or emptiness. But he gives a lot more detail on this one. 6 days you shall labor, do all your work. Seventh day, though, the seventh day, not the Lord's day. No, that's another misnomer. And, you know, again, reducing his name to nothing and taking his Sabbath and reducing it to nothing is a Sabbath unto Yahuwah Yireh. In it you shall not do any manner of work, not you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that's within your gates, not even the guy wearing the funny fish hat and the black robes. Uh-oh. Because in 6 days Yahuwah made heaven and earth, the sea and all that's in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, Yahuwah has blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So there's actually a four-verse explanation of why it says, why he says, do not do what the whore church has done and changed. And they'll even tell you, it's not in Scripture that it was ever changed. We did it. Men did it on the alleged authority of apostolic succession. Secession, not succession. And they got it wrong. And they're doing something which he says not to do. And as a matter of fact, in the process, violating at least one of his commandments and multiply at the same time, more likelihood. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which Yahuwah Yireh is giving you. Notice this is the first commandment that includes a blessing. And then we get the bang, bang, bang set, the two-word set of commandments, each of which begins with the Hebrew word lo, or do not. Or in the Old English, it's thou shalt not. Okay, but the first one, lo tirzach, thou shalt not slay. Thou shalt not commit murder. Lo tirzach. Next one, thou shalt not commit adultery. Lo tignath. Lo tignath. And we know, of course, that adultery is something very specific. It requires a married woman. It is a man taking that which is not his, another man's wife. Lo tignath. Finally, thou shalt not steal. Lo tignov. And as I often mention, we usually take this to be, you know, don't steal the his car, don't steal his money, but it's also don't steal his children. And because there are some other commandments that seem to cover the don't steal the other things your neighbor has, a lot of times the Midrash will emphasize that this is not just don't steal, but don't steal people. It has to do with kidnapping explicitly. Not that the other things are any less prohibited. Thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor. In this sense, the general concept, these are things that are not yours, and that even includes taking his name, bearing false witness against his name, his reputation, accusing him of something he is not doing. You shall not covet. Okay, here we go. This is lo tikmod. And it actually has the meaning, not just covet, but a lot of times the English speakers don't seem to know exactly what that means. Lust for. Connive against is another way to put it. In other words, let me make this clear, because this tends to get wrongly talked about in a lot of cases. Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house, no, not his neighbor's wife, anything, not anything that's of his. We'll go through that in just a second. But the idea here is desire or lust for or a plot against. Because it's not simply saying, hey, he's got a nice car, I'd love to have a car like that. The guy's got a beautiful house, I'd love to have a house like that. He has a beautiful wife, well, you know, I'd like to have a wife myself. She's a beautiful one, she's a great cook, she's all these wonderful things. That one is unique, okay? I can get a car like my neighbor's car, maybe, but to covet that which is specifically his is clear when it's his wife. Or something that is his and not yours. Nor shall you covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is your neighbor's. And I like this. I've used this midrashic terminology for quite a few years. Essentially, the way to understand this is what is called the permitted reach. In other words, if it's his, this is his property, it is outside your permitted reach. It's not yours. Okay, so if it's something which you can have one like it, or it is not outside your permitted reach, it makes the boundaries here a bit more clear. It also makes it more clear what we're talking about when we say the next thing, this idea of thought precedes action. To covet really is a more dramatic word than just look at it and say, that's nice. It is to plot for it, to lust for it. I want it so bad, I might be willing to kill him to get it. No, all of that is the thing that is permitted. And we see that Yeshua really emphasizes that in the Sermon on the Mount, too. Okay, so it says, that's the last of the ten, right? Yep. All of the people, they kol ha'am, all of the people, saw. They ro'im, that's the plural, they used their eyes and they saw. What did they saw? They saw the thunderings. What? How do you see thunderings? And this is part of the reason why, and this is a Rashiism, basically, is saying, look, there's something going on here which is outside the normal ken of people. In other words, we're used to thinking about hear thunder, see lightning. But what happened in this case was something dramatically outside their experience. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And this change in the word, I think, really helps to bring it home to us. My English here says they perceived the thunderings. Okay, it's not wrong, but to see the thunderings as opposed to just perceiving them says something much bigger than just hearing what their ears was going on. They saw the lightnings, too, the voice of the horn. They saw that, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled. They stood far off. And they said unto Moshe, oh, man, oh, okay, you speak with us, and we'll hear. But please, don't let Elohim speak with us, lest we die. I'll say it again. Whatever it was that happened here, it scared the heck out of them. The Midrash and the text, to a lesser extent, but it certainly makes the point, says that this was so dramatic, the rocks cracked, cows calved, and all kinds of things literally just kind of came apart at the seams. This was dramatic. This was a massive download in every way. It overwhelmed their senses. So Moshe said to the people, fear not, for Elohim has come to test you, and that his fear may be before you, so that you don't sin. He wants you to get this. The people stood far off, and Moshe drew near under the thick darkness where Elohim was. And the word here is actually har-ar-pal. It's the first time this concept appears in Scripture, and it's sometimes rendered as gloom. As a matter of fact, this is a very, in a way, similar to this darkness that we saw in Egypt, but it's something which is, again, beyond their ken. Yahuwah said to Moshe, thus you shall say unto the B'nai Israel, you yourselves have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. So they saw it, and they really saw it. You shall not make with me gods of silver or gods of gold. Don't make that to you. An altar of earth you shall make unto me, and you sacrifice on that your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep, your oxen, in every place where I cause my name to be mentioned. The real name, right? The name that they took out, the name that essentially is that which you shall not reduce to nothingness. I will come you there, and I will bless you. Now, if you make for me an altar of stone, he says, you're not to build it of hewn stones. This is always, it's key, but it's interesting. You don't make anything for his altar out of stones that have had a tool used upon them. Because if you put up any tool upon it, you have profaned it. It's no good anymore. And not only that, the conjugation in the Hebrew here is that peel conjugation, which is the extreme action word. In other words, not have you only profaned it, you have wounded it, defiled it, violated it. You've made it worse than nothing. And then the last verse in the portion. Nor shall you go up by steps to mine altar, that your nakedness not be uncovered thereon. So I guess when you lift your knees and go up the steps, it's a possibility of exposing some nakedness. So it's important. And with that, the Torah portion ends.